This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Lake Effect is exploring the impact of climate change in a series of conversations with Paul Rober, a distinguished professor of atmospheric science at UW-Milwaukee. The series includes listener questions about how climate change is directly impacting our region and our lives. And in this installment, a listener who lives near Lake Michigan asks why we don't feel a cooling effect from the lake anymore. Rober dives into the impact of climate change on people who live and spend time along the lake in a conversation with WUWM's environmental reporter, Susan Bentz. The conversation begins with Rober addressing the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration's findings that this January was the warmest on record for the globe.
You can actually look back in history, maybe 50 or 60 years ago, if you look at the top five warmest years on record, not monthly, but years, you'll see that it's fairly randomly distributed. But then as you go forward in time, especially since about the 1970s, you'll see that the two or three of the years will be in the last five, will be the top warmest. And over the last several years, every year is in the top five. So what was the warmest year 10 years ago is not even in the top five list anymore. It's just amazing to see how that changes. So we're seeing a very strong warming trend. It's very obvious. And it's much more amplified when you look at regional temperatures. So even though we can talk about a global averages, and it may sound like, you know, oh, it's a couple years warmer. I'm sorry, a couple degrees warmer than average. To most people, that doesn't seem like a lot. But then if you look regionally or locally, you can see that those temperatures are much larger than that. So you can see places where it's 10 degrees warmer than it has been historically. And that has a huge effect on the weather that one experiences.
The Midwest or areas of the Midwest had some of those highest temperatures. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, the strongest warming is in the highest latitudes, well north of us. But we also are seeing some pretty strong impacts. And it's even more significant when you look at the Great Lakes. The Great Lakes areas with the warming in the atmosphere, which has been moderate, the warming of the lake waters has been substantial. So, for example, Lake Michigan, the average temperature has warmed 8 degrees since 1980, which is a tremendous amount of warming. And that has huge impacts on things like Great Lakes water levels. And, of course, you know, if you're thinking about cooler by the lake and influences like that, that's a big effect as well.
So that's exactly what a listener wrote in was, having lived near the lake for many years, that cooler by the lake doesn't feel like it's happening.
And it still does happen, but it happens less prominently than it used to, because if it's a much warmer lake, and the warming, by the way, is also much more significant in the summer than the rest of the year. And so when you expect to see that cooler by the lake is in the summer, so you have a really hot day and that cool air that's over the lake will come on shore and you feel that natural cooling effect from that. But if you have significant warming of the surface waters of the lake, which is what we've been seeing, then the amount of cool air that's available on the lake, it's still there, but it's not nearly as strong as it used to be.
Last month's conversation, you talked about the fact that you speak with groups as frequently as you can. Do you hear from municipalities? Do you hear from elected officials, and especially municipalities along the lake, who are dealing with lake levels and wondering how should or could we react to this, and can we project ahead to know if we try to protect the shore, is that doable?
Well, I hear a lot from people who have property along the lakeshore and interested parties that want to talk to people who have that. But I don't hear a lot from elected officials about that, which is interesting.
So what are property owners along the lakeshore asking you, and what do you actually advise them or just say, sorry, this is something we're going to have to live with?
Well, I talk about how climate change is affecting this, and the Lake Michigan water levels is being a great example. It's mostly unregulated, so there's some regulation of the inflow from Lake Superior. There's no regulation of the outflow. So it varies mostly based on the natural variation. Whatever the weather and climate is doing is how it forces the lakes to go up or go down. And historically, we've had lots of rises and falls in the lake level. So, for example, In the 1960s, there was then the historic record low lake level, and then in the 1980s, there was a record high. We since broke that record low in 2013, and we're on the verge of breaking the record high, the all-time record high. This year, probably, we'll break it. And what's different from what's happened in the past is that we understand that the primary drivers for lake level are precipitation over the lake and in the drainage basin that flows into the lake, and evaporation out of the lake. And those two are driven by different factors, but both are related to climate change. So, for example, with climate change, we know the precipitation is much greater. In fact, we've seen that in recent years. You have a lot more precipitation that's occurring over the lakes and in the drainage basin that leads into the lakes. But with that warming of the temperatures that I also mentioned, you also have much more evaporation. And the reason for that is because you have less ice cover over the winters, and so it basically accelerates the warming process of the lake through the subsequent spring and summer months. And so by the time you're in the late summer, you can get water temperatures that are above 80 degrees. And just as a little factoid, between 2001 and 2020, our current year, so the last 20 years, we had almost one per year episode of above 80 degree Fahrenheit in the lake. And this is the mid part of the lake. It's not on the shoreline. It's in the mid part of the lake where you expect it to have the least warming occurring. So really substantial warming. Compare that to 20 years prior, where it was maybe once every 4 or 5 years, you'd see something like that. So it's really increased dramatically. And that means that evaporation under those kinds of situations will increase. But sometimes we also get cold winters, like we had several years ago. We had a very cold winter. We had much more ice cover, which is much more like it was historically normal conditions, and so much less evaporation. Now, you put on top of that a lot of precipitation, and all of a sudden the lake levels are going to really start to rise rapidly, and that's what we've seen. So what climate change really tells us is that we're going to have probably a lot more variability between those very high levels and those very low levels than we used to have. Even though we used to have that, it's going to be much more prominent than it was historically. And so if you're along the lakeshore, that's obviously a big problem for you.
Let's just go back to you mentioned regulation or lack thereof and the inflow and outflow. Can you dig into that a little deeper and explain that?
So, for example, Lake Superior has to try to keep its lake levels within a certain range. And so the way they do that is they regulate the amount of water that flows out of Lake Superior into Lake Michigan. There's a channel that flows from Lake Superior to Lake Michigan. So they're able to regulate how much water they actually let come into Lake Michigan. Other lakes have similar sorts of regulation to try to maintain their lake levels within a certain range. There's only so much you can do with that, given what the climate driving is. Lake Michigan has that in terms of the inflow, but it's because of what they want to do for Superior, not what they want to do for Lake Michigan. And Lake Michigan has no regulation on its outflow. And so of all the Great Lakes, we have probably more susceptibility to that variability than any of the other Great Lakes. But they're all subject to this because the climate driving is enormous.
I'm drawn back to your teaching and you're teaching a course on climate change. How does the way that you teach and the way that your course might flow, depending on what's happening in our world, does that influence the way that you share the message, the scientific information with the public?
So I teach several different classes in the Honors College, and one of them is a climate change class that I've taught twice over the last few years. And what I've noticed, I taught it first about 10 years ago and then again a couple years ago, and I noticed a huge shift in the perspective of the students coming into that class. And these are discussion-based classes. So what we do is we read information from both the popular press and scientific literature to just wrap our heads around what people are thinking about the issue and also what the scientific understanding is. And then we discuss that and say, okay, what do we conclude from this? And obviously it's an enormous problem, and it's very difficult for anyone, never mind students, just to think about, okay, I'm going to be living the next 50 or 60 years, and this is what I'm facing. What do I do about this? And so, that, you know, it obviously segues into some of those issues after they get a sense of what the magnitude of the problem actually is. Well, what can I do about it? And the lesson that comes out of this is always the same, which is you can't give up. First and foremost, there's no way you'll ever solve a problem if you just throw up your hands and say, I give up. So you can make it better. There are things you can do on the local scale that can sort of generate more popular interest. But I'd say it really has to happen at all levels. You have to have action both at the local scale, so community scale, regional scale, state scale, national scale, but also international scale. So there's also a top-down piece of this. There's leadership that's required at all those levels to sort of galvanize that public interest. And one of the interesting things that I've seen is that climate change is something that people have been concerned about for a long time, but it never seems to rank as a really high priority because there's always short-term things that sort of take precedence over that. And what's really important for people to understand now is that what we do now is going to affect us for a long time in the future. And so even though it may seem like anything you're doing now is not of the highest priority, it really is, because if you don't do things now, you won't have the opportunity to do them later on.
So have your students come up with interesting ways or suggestions on how to galvanize public attention on this?
One of the things that's come out of our discussions is really the way you change people's perceptions of things is to share what you know with people who trust you. And so it's trusted circles, and it's really that sphere of influence that you have by talking to other people. So you talk to somebody who knows you, trusts your opinion, understands that you know something about what you're talking about, and just have that conversation with them. And those circles widen as you do that. And what happens is if enough people start to get that understanding, then pressure is brought to bear on leaders to actually, you know, provide leadership on issues like this. And so that's really how you affect change. So I don't think it's like, you know, some big public demonstration particularly, although that has some use too, is to draw attention. I think the more important thing is just to have conversations.
Could you talk a little bit about sea levels?
One of the most daunting prospects for climate change that people in the Midwest don't think too much about is sea level rise. And I think, you know, the coronavirus is a great example of how interconnected the world is. And so what happens on the U.S. coastlines, never mind the rest of the world, has a huge impact on what happens in the Midwest. Now, 40% of the U.S. population and U.S. economy is concentrated on the coastlines of this country. Sea level rise is one of the most rapidly changing aspects of climate change. And we know now that there's something, for example, a report just came out on the Thwaites Glacier, which is in Antarctica. And you can think of it as kind of like a plug for the West Antarctic ice shelf. And the Thwaites Glacier, people have suspected that it was unstable for a little while, and they didn't have any direct measurements to sort of verify that hypothesis. And so there was a field program that was recently completed where they measured what the seawater was underneath that glacier, because it's sort of overhanging the ocean at that point. And they found that, in fact, it's several degrees above freezing. So it verified that hypothesis. So what's happening is the water is sufficiently warm that it's melting the glacier from underneath. That destabilizes the glacier. It just slides down into the water, and the whole shelf begins to collapse as a result of that. The reason why that's important is because that amount of ice can raise global sea levels by 10 feet. And that 10-foot rise doesn't happen overnight. It's over hundreds of years. We don't know exactly what the time scale for this melting process is. What we do know is all of this is happening a lot faster than we originally thought. So the projections are that sort of an expected scenario, if that were to happen, might be, you know, 3 feet of sea level rise by the end of this century. If you look at maps of the U.S. coastline, and by the way, sea level rise, if it's rising globally by 3 feet, it will rise more than 3 feet on the east coast of the United States and in the Gulf of Mexico area along the Florida coastline, all those areas are experiencing faster sea level rise than the global rate. So if you look at maps of what happens to those coastlines, you'll see that, for example, Miami is virtually underwater. Large areas of Boston are underwater. So this is a huge, huge impact. Now, again, that doesn't happen overnight, but over years, you'll see more and more storm impacts from that and more just encroachment of the water on those areas, and people will have to adjust to that. That's incredibly expensive and disruptive. And if you don't think that that's going to have an influence in the Midwest, you should think again, because it will. But, you know, the point is that you can do something about it.
Paul Rober is a distinguished professor of atmospheric science at UW-Milwaukee. He spoke with WUWM's environmental reporter, Susan Bentz. Their conversations on climate change will continue over the next few months. And if you've got a question about the impact of climate change, you can submit it at wuwm.com/environment. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR.